These are all of our stories. These are who we are as Americans.
Freedom leads to prosperity. Freedom is the victor.
This is the podcast of Grassroots Radio Colorado with your host, Chris Cook.
And this is the podcast for Grassroots Radio Colorado. I am your host, Chris Cook. I want to talk to you tonight about stories. You hear at the top of my liner, Ted Cruz saying, these are all of our stories as Americans. And that's a lot of the focus of this podcast, is actually telling those stories. That's the thing it's the thing that gets my blood going. You know, I love to hear good stories that tie me into the values, that tie me into the principles of this country, and that kind of pull it all together. And stories do that in a way that nothing else does. Facts and figures don't do that. Facts and figures aren't persuasive. They don't bring us to an emotional understanding of what it is that we're looking at. It's they're facts and figures. I've seen it. The analogy is, imagine a tray of sand, okay, and it's perfectly smooth, and you take these rocks and you just drop them in the sand. If you pour water down one side and tilt the pan, the water will run everywhere. It won't necessarily run to those rocks. Now, those rocks are the facts and figures and charts and stuff that we pull out all the time as Republicans. We do this. And if the first chart isn't persuasive enough, we make a bigger chart. I mean, that's how we think, is, you know, all of this rational data is going to be persuasive. But that's not what's persuasive. What's persuasive is a story. And a story, in that analogy, you take your finger and you draw tracks to each of those rocks. You draw the tracks that you want the water to follow down to those facts and figures and charts and so forth. Then you put the water in, and the water follows the tracks right where you want it to go, right to that rational data. That's what stories do, is they help carve that path. And that's why I'm so fascinated with stories. I'm fascinated with people's stories and how things come together for them. You know, I'm fascinated with fairy tales. I'm fascinated with heroes' stories and sci-fi, and I just love stories. I do. And that's why, in large part, that's what I try to focus on. I'm not always successful at it. I am a Republican, after all, and not well-trained in doing stories. But, you know, it's what we do actually as humans, and we do this naturally. Think about your family and the family that you grew up in, and think about the stories that were told as you were growing up about your ancestors, your grandmother, your great 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 grandfather, the guy who came over on the Mayflower, the family that trekked across the prairies to settle in the Rocky Mountains. Think about those stories that were told and retold and retold. You know, my stories, in my family, we tell the story, and this is actually sort of a poignant one. I was not raised in a religious household, and the reason I wasn't raised in a religious household is in the story of my folks when they were dating. And they went to church with my father's parents. And my father was raised Nazarene in Ohio. And the Nazarenes, if you're not familiar with the Nazarene religion, they were sort of the original holy rollers, the original televangelists. You know, this is the sect that sort of spawned all of that. And so they're in church, my mom and my dad, and they're just dating, and they're in church with my dad's two brothers and my dad's parents. And there was an altar call in the middle of the service. Usually altar calls happen at the end of the service. I didn't know this when I was being told this story growing up. I didn't find that out till many years later. But there was an altar call in the middle of the service. And come hell or high water, my dad's brothers had decided that my dad was going down to that altar and physically dragged him down there. And my mom was so horrified by this. She had been raised in a Methodist household, but she was so horrified by this action, and my dad, of course, was horrified by it, that they left that service and they never went back. They were married in a Nazarene church, and I think that was the last time they were in a church. And it's because of that story, and that story tells you what the values are and what the emotions were as to why I was not raised with a religion. My parents wanted me to make up my own decision or to make up my own mind about religion, which I have done as an adult. And I appreciate that approach. I do. I don't have kids, so I've never had to replicate that decision and decide whether that was the right one for me. But it's a poignant story. And it's stories like that that sort of define a family, you know, that your family is the one that has that history of trekking across the prairie. Your family is the one that has that history of working for generations in a factory in Ohio. Your family is the one that has that history that draws you together and pulls you together as a family. Well, as a nation, we have stories too. And that, it becomes a much, the stakes, I think, become, they're not higher than with a family, but they're certainly more pervasive throughout society. Is we have these stories as a nation that need to be told in order to define that national cultural identity. And that's the study of history. I mean, what's the last five letters in history? It's story. That's what history is. It's a story of a people. It's a story of a planet. It's a story of you know, subcultures. It's the stories of all of these things. That's what history is. So why do we study history? And it really is to become connected to that larger public purpose. I mean, you tell the family stories to become connected to the identity of the family. You tell history to become connected to that larger family, that larger identity as a nation. And when we study U.S. history, that's what we're trying to do. I mean, we have our students study history for many purposes, and a lot of teachers will tell you it's so that they develop their critical thinking skills and they develop their analysis skills and they learn the facts and they do all that, and all that stuff's important. But really, historically, ironically, really what we're doing when we study history, and I'm talking really in the general sense, any nation that teaches its national history, what they are doing is inculcating within their students a right of civic membership. I mean, we're bringing them into the public sphere. We're telling them those stories so that they understand where they fit in the place and time that they are at and how their portion of that fits into a much bigger picture. Fits into that 30,000 foot view of who we are as Americans. It helps those students find their place within that bigger sphere. And I read this great, great article today in Hillsdale puts out this wonderful publication. It's called, and I'm going to, I've never heard it pronounced, so I may not be pronouncing it correctly. Imprimis, Imprimis, and it's a print publication, comes once a month, and the title article is what inspired tonight's podcast. It's called History, American Democracy, and the AP Test Controversy. It's by a guy named Wilfred McClay from the University of Oklahoma, and I will find this online and post it because it's a fabulous, fabulous article. And the thing that he says in this, Professor McClay says in this article, is that we are helping students find the fullness of their political and cultural inheritance. And think about the beauty of that. That yes, we have public education, and you can rail against that, and you know we can have problems with that. But as part of that public education, if we can get our history right, what we're doing is we're helping those students claim the fullness of their political and cultural inheritance. I talk a lot on this program, on this podcast, about fulfilling the potential that the founders had set up for us with the Constitution, fulfilling the potential of that baby country that they gave birth to in 1776 with our moral declaration and the Declaration of Independence. That the potential contained within the Declaration of Independence is what we're helping them claim by teaching them history. That's kind of a beautiful concept when you step back and think about it for a minute. History is different from every other subject, and it's not about, you know, memorizing facts, learning how to do theorems and that kind of stuff. It's not about, you know, learning the rules of syntax or analyzing literature. It's about so much more than that when you look at it from this perspective. And I just, the concept of that, it's thrilling. It is absolutely thrilling that this is an antidote to so much that we've seen happen within our culture and our society. If we get our history right, we'll have a much easier time of fighting against the fractionalization of our nation, the identity politics, and this cultural slide that we've seen happen. Part of the problem, though, obviously, is that we're failing to get our history right. And part of it is that there's a change in the profession of historian that's been happening over the course of the past, you know, century or so. History was one of the social sciences, is one of the social sciences that thought that, you know, they could nail down data and nail down an interpretation of history scientifically. It was sort of a Hegelian type of concept that, you know, if we just tweak this and turn this knob, out pops a absolutely reliable history. Of course, history doesn't work like that. It's stories. It's not going to work like that. It's not going to be scientific like that. It's not going to be a social science. But based in that concept and that sort of grand experiment that happened in the earlier part of the 20th century, we've now come to the profession of history as being increasingly subspecialized, and they're focusing and they're drilling down and they're going into special. If you look at any college catalog and look at the history section of any college catalog, in there, with the possible exception of Hillsdale, in the United States, you'll find these very specialized historical courses, not surveys, not things that look at this pantheonic, expansive view of history as this grand, you know, I hesitate to say grand design, although I'm sure several of you are going, yes, it is grand design, but it's such a grand vista. And when you look at history from that perspective, first of all, there's a couple things that happen. When you look at it from that view, as looking at just about anything from that view, from that level, stepping back and seeing the forest, things start to be put into perspective. And you start to understand how things fit in with other things. You see the bigger picture. And having that bigger picture is so immensely helpful in heading off so many different problems, such as these identity politics, such as, you know, getting so wrapped up in your ego that, you know, nobody else could possibly understand you and therefore they are privileged and they should be punished. You know, that's all of these cultural phenomenons that we see, you know, rape culture, whatever. You know, I mean, all the cultural phenomenons and a lot of the stuff that I rail against, it's symptomatic of a very parochial, compartmentalized view of the world when you don't have that 30,000-foot perspective. Well, we need to inject that back in. But it has an even greater impact when we're talking about things like college courses. And specifically what I want to address is the AP US History Framework. Because, first of all, it's relevant. to this area and to this time period right now. And second of all, it has a much, much bigger implication than I think any of us have really looked at if you step back and look at it from this perspective. So I hope you'll stick around. I'll be right back. Welcome back to the podcast for Grassroots Radio Colorado. I am your host, Chris Cook. That was The Bloody Hells. What's She Goth That I Ain't Goth? It's just, okay, I mean, this music, the way they title it, it's awesome. Freemusicarchive.org, go download it. There's a lot of fun stuff on there. You just got to check it out. It's a great, great site. So we're talking about history. I mean, what has happened to our history? Why has it become so increasingly segmentalized and compartmentalized? And understanding that when our history does this, when our study of history, our personal story, our national story, is tied up in this mentality that we are split into all of these different subgroups, well, our national identity follows suit. That we as a country are segmented into all of these different little subgroups. That's what follows. We've told this national story within our schools. We've educated our students that this is the case, that we are not one giant, you know, one big nation, that we have a common history, we have a common interest, and we have a common agenda, and we have a common duty and obligation and privilege. We're not taught that anymore. Our students are not taught that anymore in our schools. And so when they're not taught that, then they're not going to think that after they graduate. They're not going to, you know, walk across that stage and then suddenly miraculously think, oh, but I am an American, and my American identity is part of who I am. And that means solidarity with everyone who is an American. And so when we haven't been teaching that for probably 40, 50 years, then the results are rather predictable. What we're seeing, the results of that idea that, you know, this American history is nothing but a history of transgressions and putting down these subcultures and making sure that they're oppressed and, you know, all that kind of stuff. If that's the history they've been taught, then that's the national story. That's the story they are telling themselves about who they are as Americans, is that they are part of some oppressed group. They're part of some subculture. They're not connected with the national identity. And America becomes a salad instead of a melting pot. That's what happens. It's what happened to me. I remember using that exact analogy in college in a communications course when I was giving a speech about how America was a salad and not a melting pot, because that's what I had been taught. That is exactly what I had been taught, that we were not part of some bigger homogenous type group, that we were not part of some bigger national identity, that we were each elements of a salad. That's how I was taught, probably how you were taught too. So I encourage you to step back and think about that and think about what the implications are. That means that we're fractionalized. That means that we are at odds with one another. We are taught this story that this group doesn't like this group, doesn't like this group, that this group did this to the other group, and we have to amend for that, we have to atone for that. That's the running narrative of America, because that's what's being taught in our US history. Let's look at the AP U.S. history. And the reason why we look at AP U.S. history, there's a couple reasons why this is important. First of all, and I think the most important one for this program itself, is that the Jefferson County School Board is facing a recall. The majority, the conservative majority on the Jefferson County School Board, is facing a recall rooted in their pushback against the new AP U.S. history framework. They pushed back on this idea of America being split up into all these cultural subgroups and only telling the story that had the bad parts in it, and not telling that longer narrative, that wider narrative that showed the bad parts. Yes, they're part of it, but showed the bad parts as part of this longer narrative, this longer struggle to overcome things like slavery, this longer struggle to you know, bring up workers' rights and that kind of thing. You know, it's as part of this longer struggle. If you only focus on slavery, you're not seeing the victory over it. If you only focus on the jungle and Upshaw, then you're not focusing on the bigger victory of how we actually increased workplace safety. And the unions came up at the time when they were actually relevant, and the unions came up and actually made workers' lives better. You know, and you're not seeing that bigger struggle. You're not seeing that bigger picture. And so that's the problem with the AP US History Framework. Now, it used to be, and I actually didn't know this until I read this article, it used to be that the AP US History Framework was 5 pages long. It just had a general content outline for the teachers, and then the teachers were left to their own discretion, their own professional discretion, to determine how to teach those content areas that would be in the test. That was the framework, and that's a good professional working relationship. That's a good way to use our teachers who are trained in this stuff, you know, and allow them the latitude to do the things that are responsive to their students, that are responsive to their communities. That's how education should work. And in 2014, the Advanced Placement, you know, the College Board decided that they were going to change the AP US History Framework. And the primary author behind the new framework is a guy named David Cameron, who has written other curriculums that are much more, even than this, much more socialist in nature. I mean, he's pretty much an avowed socialist, the way that he comes out. And AP US History Framework is no different. It's absolutely no different. What it does is it emphasizes those subcultures. It emphasizes our differences, and it doesn't emphasize the story of America as a nation, our national identity, our national civic identity. It's not focusing on that. The 2010 framework actually had a section about national character and American exceptionalism. It was in the 2010 framework, focusing on national identity, using history for the thing that it was intended to do, to bring these students fully into their civic privilege and duty, and help them to understand where they fit in that larger picture. The 2014 framework, the one that the school board was pushing back on, has a focus, and I'm quoting, how various identities, cultures, and values have been preserved or changed in different contexts, i.e. racial identities, gender identities, class identities, ethnic identities. In other words, splitting us up into subgroups and studying the subgroups rather than studying us as a nation and our national identity. The bottom line on that, 2010 framework focused on what pulls us together. 2014 framework focused on what drives us apart. This is a 180 degree difference. And the school board was absolutely right to push back on that kind of an idea, to get rid of American exceptionalism. Now, I understand that the 2015 framework has a mention of it, and I haven't reviewed that yet, but it's to focus on what fractionalizes us. How is that going to heal this nation? How is that going to pull us together? If we're telling students the stories about how we are all different and how we have all been in conflict throughout the entire history of the United States, what are they going to think about the United States itself? Are they going to have any sort of patriotic feeling towards this country? No. Are they going to have any sort of patriotic allegiance to the founding institutions, the Constitution, the Declaration of Independence, to what the founders were trying to do in the first place? Are they going to have anything close to a warm, fuzzy feeling for those kinds of things? No, they're not. They're going to see that as the commencement of a long history of conflict and being at odds with other people and the oppression of other people. That's all they're going to see, because that's all that's being emphasized. We need to get our history back to the point, and our historians need to change their focus so that they're looking at what role history plays in fulfilling its civic duty, in bringing students and bringing all people really into the civic sphere, into their public sphere, into the common sphere of us as a nation. Now, it's kind of ironic that I'm talking about this tonight, because last night's podcast was kind of railing against unity. It was railing against the idea that we all need to come together and, you know, under a label and be part of that. So it might sound contradictory, but what I'm trying to do is save the Republic. I've never made any bones about that. I'm trying to save the Republic. Number one step towards saving the Republic is convincing other people that they need to want to save the Republic too. That's part of it. Understanding that national identity and how special this country is, how special and precious the idea of America is, that's partly accomplished by telling that national story and telling it well, not leaving out the bad parts, but telling the bad parts in context so that we can understand how those things were overcome, how we changed our story, how we moved from point A to point B and got to a better place and continued to do that and have continued to do that throughout the course of this entire nation. That's worth fighting for. That story itself is worth fighting for. The preservation of the nation that is the result of that story, that's worth fighting for. And that's why I find this so immensely appealing. You know, we talked when I used to do a show with Tom Tancredo, we would often talk about immigration. That's one of, obviously, his biggest hot button issues. And one of the things that Tom would always emphasize was that immigrants who come to this country, they're very welcome to come, but they need to assimilate into America. They need to become Americans. And that's what has happened throughout generations and generations of immigrants into this country. Yes, initially, many of us, you know, originated from immigrants, but either they or their children became Americans because they adopted that story. They understood what their place was in that story as Americans and how they could take their place within the civic sphere, within the public eye, or within the public sphere, and be part of this country. And they became Americans by doing so. And we're having issues with assimilation of immigrants at this point because we're not even emphasizing assimilation with our own students, with our own students who are sitting there in their schools, who are citizens. They're not being encouraged to have a patriotic feeling towards America. They're not being encouraged to have any part of anything to do with this country. They're being encouraged instead to be ashamed. To be ashamed of our story, to think of it as a story of just a long line of abuses and nothing to be proud of. And that is destructive to our national identity. That doesn't uphold it. That's absolutely destructive to our national identity and doesn't get us anywhere closer to having a healing of the things that are wrong. A healing and bringing people together, voluntarily pulling people together under the tent of that story and who we are as Americans. That's what I want to see happen. And so I do applaud all three members of all three conservative members of the Jeffco board and any other school board that has been pushing back against the AP U.S. history framework. We need to reclaim our history. We need to reclaim our story and understand it for what it is. It's the story of a great nation. Thank you so much for listening to me tonight. This is the podcast for Grassroots Radio Colorado. Find me on Facebook, facebook.com/grassrootsradiocolorado. Email is Chris, KRIS@grassrootsradiocolorado.com. Remember, America is great. Because because Americans are great. So go out there and be exceptional.